Hey, She Slayers, and welcome to another episode of She Slays the Day podcast. I am your host, Dr. Lauren Brunswick. And if you live under a rock, I got the skeleton. If you were listening last week, you got a recording not knowing. Maybe I would get him. Maybe I wouldn't. I got him. And he's wonderful. He's everything I hoped and dreamed. So you two should, it really was this lesson in manifesting. And now the next thing I've decided to manifest is a vintage Bronco. So my first vehicle was a Jeep Wrangler because, I don't know, don't even get me started. My mom and I have had so many conversations where it was the coolest first vehicle. Like, can we agree? Like 16-year-old, like, you know, all the windows and stuff off, music blasting because it had a subwoofer, 6 CD changer. Actually, no, it didn't. It was cool. Now, as a parent, though, my mom and I have had many conversations where I'm like, really? What? Like, mom, what were you thinking? So I am ready to get back into my like Jeep days, but now they're just like everywhere. And I don't know what effect that is. You know, when you're like, something's on your mind and then all of a sudden you see it everywhere. It's got a fancy name that I don't know. But like legit, there are, I don't know. I see them everywhere. And I live in a, so I'm like, all right, I want something like that. And then one day I discovered vintage Broncos. Oh my God, they're gorgeous. But here's the problem. So I have heard through multiple people, nobody has not confirmed this, by the way, that you don't actually, like driving a vintage car is not a fun experience. And like, I was like, oh, I don't mind if I have to do the little swirly thing for my windows. Like, that's fine if it doesn't have automatic windows. And they're like, no, it's more things like anti-lock brakes. And I'm like, well, that doesn't sound like that big of a deal. It is apparently. Power steering, also apparently a big deal. And to get them, I'm sure you could get a discount on one, but I follow this account that like soups them up, like gets vintage Broncos, but like with all the automations and new stuff. These things are $250,000. Now, maybe I'm thinking small. Maybe I'm just like, Lauren, this is your limit. If Steph Wigner were on, she would be like, Lauren, this is your limiting belief that you couldn't one day afford. But here's the deal. Here's where I'm at. It's like a comfortability. So like right now, let's just like, well, we're not going to do too much math because you don't need to like know the ins and outs of everything in my life. Let's just say that like I would need to be making, because like I could choose to afford that instead of building my real estate portfolio. I'm not going to choose to afford that at this point in my life, but I would be so nervous to drive it. So therefore then I go, well, how rich would I have to be where driving a $250,000 vehicle would be like driving a $60,000 vehicle? Cause you know, we have a Tahoe, like those beasts are not cheap. And, you know, I'm driving that thing around, getting skeletons and going to garage sales and stuff like that. So, yeah. Anyways, they're gorgeous. But then also, like, they just are very attractive to other people. And so people are like, they're going to scratch it and they're going to look at it. So, like, I need to find this line between, I don't want to be everybody. Like, I want to be stand out a little bit. But like, I don't want to be so unique that it's like I'm driving around my town in a $250,000, like, no. So I don't know what I'm going to manifest in next, but that's going to be my next new obsession. But you guys can hold off on sending me all of the reels this time. I appreciate it. Unless you see a different alternative, like a different car. Like my stepdad was like, oh, there's this thing called the Jimmy or whatever. And I'm like, okay. But then there's also a part of me that just wants like a 90s white Bronco. So not like a true vintage, but like everybody, every millennial knows exactly why I want a 90s white Bronco, but I wouldn't be able to have the top off. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But that's the next obsession. Okay. Today is part two of our chiropractic assistant specific podcast. So last week, if you didn't listen to Miranda, I would highly recommend going back and listening to that. Whether you are a clinic owner or associate or chiropractic assistant, and for those of you that are not chiropractors, that's what we call like our support staff. They're so much more than receptionists, as you found out from last time. And this time, like, they really keep the clinic running. But that's just what we call them. We call them CAs. And we could not do what we do and make the money we do without them. So today is part two. We have on Casey Grommer, and she's all about getting employees bought in to this, which is a big thing, you know, that if you own your own clinic, you know, one of the hurdles that we often face as clinic owners is feeling like nobody cares as much as we do. Now, I would say there's probably some psychology in there that we don't allow them to care. We don't trust them to love on it as much as we do. You know, I think that there's some truth to, like, is it make sense that they're ever going to do as much as we would? Maybe not. I don't know. But today we are talking with Casey on how to get more buy-in, how to get them loving on our clinic, just like we do. So let's see. So Casey, she empowers entrepreneurs to ditch traditional business paradigms that often lead to burnout, being stuck, or unfulfilled. She helps CEOs translate their vision into strategy by helping them create realistic, workable ways of running their businesses while still achieving success. Casey has 20 years of experience in business and marketing, along with an MBA, and hosts the Female Founders Breaking Boundaries podcast. And today she is finishing up part two of our CA specific content for those clinic owners. You're going to get a ton out of this too. You can go and share and sound real smart to your people at your next meeting. So I don't think we have any other updates. You got your ticket to Cairo WealthCon yet? I know some of you don't, because we are not at a couple thousand attendees yet. We just released earlier this week one of our first keynote speakers. We have for sure one more that I think is being might have been released by the time, but it's not released. I can't say it yet. I don't know. But earlier this week, Barb Shrehans, who is your tax pro, she is going to be headlining, I believe, Friday night. I've done multiple. Next week. Okay. Depending. The next episode is actually an episode with Barb. So you're going to get to see her in her glory of, like, just how intelligent she is. Every time I walk away, I'm just like, whoa. Yep. You just saved me thousands of dollars. Thank you. I appreciate it. So make sure you get your tickets. Get them now. If you don't have a promo code, there's a couple out there. CWC will get you $100 off your ticket. I know you're going to say, well, of course you would say that. Honestly, Steph, Elise, and I have put so much value into the VIP ticket. I would recommend getting that. I just would, because you get an entire half day of content, and there's two additional trainings and lunches that those speakers are, oh my God, I don't think I can tell you yet who they are. One of them was Callum Falcon from the AI episode a couple times ago. And then the other one may or may not have to do with maximizing credit card points and travel. And it's not Kirby. It's a guy who gets actually paid for this. Not that Kirby, we did do an episode a couple weeks ago, again, on this topic, but this guy charges people thousands of dollars for his services, and you would get lunch with him for free if you bought your VIP ticket. So get it. Let's take a breath and pray. Dear God, thank you so much for every support person that exists in our life. Our CAs, holy cow, we could not do business without them. They also, in our clinic, are huge in loving on our patients. And sometimes, you know, running a high volume clinic, you just don't feel like you get that downtime with patients. Hey, how was the soccer tournament this weekend for your kiddo? And like, what's the theme for the birthday? I do my best to get that in. But sometimes you just feel like you just want to sit and have a breath and say, how are you, without feeling like you're falling behind. And so having these people in clinic, their job is so, so important. And if you are a CA listening, I hope there's so much glory that obviously goes to the service, the adjustment, the hands of the chiropractor. But like to every CA listening, your heart that you pour from into the patients is something that we could not build a business without. And so just God, let them feel a little hug from me right now and continue to be inspired to shine their love and light and service in the way that they can in clinic and out in the community, talking about chiropractic. They can change lives by talking about chiropractic. Like so many people don't know about chiropractic and like, okay, maybe you can't do the adjustment. Well, you can't, sorry. If you're a CA, you can't do the adjustment. You for sure cannot. But you can bring them into the clinic. So in your name, we pray. Amen. Okay. I'm going to give you a little bonus story here, and it's hilarious. If you want to fast forward to Casey, you can, but you have to hear this story that popped in while I was. So a while ago, we were hiring for a CA, and you might have heard this story before, maybe not. So we are all our team, we're at the point in the interview where all of our team is there, and we are leaning in. Like, this chick has worked for a chiropractor for 15 years. The guy retired. She misses, like, it's been like 3 years since he retired. She misses working in a chiropractic office. She loved working for that doc. Like, we are just like, oh my gosh, she's like intelligent. She's just like, oh, we love her. We love her. And so one of the last questions that I was asking at the time, it kind of changes because I get bored and have ADHD, but one of the last questions I ask is, tell me about your personal experience with chiropractic. So I go, I don't remember her name. Let's call her Toria. So I go, okay, Toria, tell me, you know, I feel bad even asking this question because obviously, you know, but like, you've been adjusted before. Like, tell me about your experience getting adjusted. Like, you love it, right? Like, you know, just like writing it off, almost didn't ask it. And she goes, oh no, I've never been adjusted. To tell you what it feels like for all of the air in the room to be sucked out in a matter of 2 seconds. Like, I was like, wait, what? You worked for a chiropractor for 15 years and you never got adjusted? She goes, no, I was too scared. You guys, it gets worse. And so like, at this point, I'm thinking like, God, I really liked her. Maybe this is salvageable. And she goes, but my kid got adjusted. And I was like, oh, okay. In my head, I'm thinking, you were too scared to get adjusted, but you got your kid adjusted. And she goes, yeah, he played sports. And so sometimes when I couldn't get it, I would bring him in to see Doc. To say you could hear a pin drop in this room at this moment, I am like trying to control my face so hard. I doubt I was. I don't have Botox and you can always read my expressions. And I go, what do you mean when you couldn't get it? And she goes, well, working for Doc, that's what she called him, for so many years, like I kind of picked up a few things. And so like when he would hurt himself playing baseball or whatever, you know, I would adjust him. And sometimes I couldn't get it. So I would bring him into the office. And this chick had no fucking idea. Sorry, it deserved the full F-bomb. What she was saying to me, like she had no idea that like this was absolutely ludicrous. So anyways, sorry to drag on the intro just a little bit longer, but that like little funny story popped out. I'm like, I don't know if I've told everyone this story. So you're welcome. You are welcome. All right. Without further ado, here is Casey Grammer on Empowering Our CAs. All right, cool. Well, welcome. Are you familiar with chiropractors prior to this?
Yes, okay. I have.
It's not a prerequisite to be on the show, but it does help. It does help you, I guess, not accidentally put their foot in their mouth sometimes where I'm like, oh, we'll just pretend you didn't say that.
I work with this business model with the health and wellness industry quite a bit. And then I have some good friends locally that I have worked with who have a rather large chiropractic practice, and I love it. So, and I'm a customer, so.
Good. You get adjusted.
Yes.
So how did you like, what's kind of like the fast track? How did you get to this point where you are helping businesses? Like, cause I mean, How would you paraphrase what you do for businesses in like one sentence?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I've ever said anything in one sentence before.
Me either, girl. Don't worry, run-on sentences are allowed.
What I do is I help business owners get out of the day-to-day operations of their business while still maintaining or sustaining their bottom line.
Okay.
So got if it. I had one sentence, that's how I
that's a good one. And that's so like, is that, how did you get to that point in your career where you were like, wow, y'all are really messed up and need some help?
Well, I don't like to think of people as messed up.
Oh, but
I
just we are. Like we're all super messed up.
Yes, we are.
You messed all up, Casey. Up. I messed up. Don't worry. I've interviewed enough people to know like we're all messed up in some way.
I just like to think of it as we're all messed up in different areas. And so this is just an area that this is how my brain functions. I spent a lot of time in corporate and I have a master's degree, an MBA. And like many, many, many people, when I left corporate, is like, well, what am I going to do now? And one of the things I noticed is as I started working with smaller businesses and smaller communities, I'm like, oh my God, y'all don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I realized that for
the health and wellness industry was one of the worst. But honestly, we are, because all of our prereqs are like, I didn't take a single economics class. I didn't take a single finance class.
Yep.
All of my prereqs were biology, chemistry, like anatomy. Yes. So yeah. And like med students are fine because they don't usually end up having to run a business.
Right.
But it's like the dentists, the vets, the chiros, we're just like out here and we're like, oh, starting a business? Like it's hard.
It is. It's amazing to me. And not even those of you who are actually running the business, but then if you think of bringing on new chiropractors, you also don't learn how to work in the industry. You learn your trade, but then you have no idea what to expect when it comes to how many clients am I going to need to maintain and pay the bills? Like they don't teach you any part of running a practice or managing other people or running a business. So yeah, I totally see that.
So when you are first working with a client, what are some of the most common issues that you're helping them solve or overcome initially?
There are so many. So I think the way I'm going to answer your question is I will tell you why people come to me. And it's usually because I am the one. So I'm not only doing the services in the business, but I'm running all of the aspects of the business, from the finances to the marketing to the administration to the customer service, everything. And I'm burnt out and I can't sustain this, but I don't know how to get out of this. And I'm at this breaking point where it's either I got to shut it down or I got to do something different. So that's usually why people come to me. And there's, you know, a multitude of different factors at play there, which is why they come to me. So I would say is, how do I get out of wearing all the hats and still make a profit and not do as much?
Right. So I would assume that their biggest concern is like, I'm doing everything. I would imagine step one is looking to see what kind of team they currently have or don't have, and making sure that that they have the proper team around them.
Yes.
Okay. So walk me through how you start to work with a chiropractor on like analyzing whether they are like staffed appropriately for their team, whether they have the right people, whether they need people, whether they need to let go of people. How do you start to look and analyze that?
Well, this is why people pay me, because there's about 18 different things that you kind of pull in and look at and plug them into your little formula and spit out. So I'll talk about a few of them. The first one that I see most often is when we, and we can apply this to our everyday life in addition to our business life, which is I'm overwhelmed and I want to get things off my plate. So I will hire somebody and I will start delegating tasks to that person. Where I come in is I'm like, yes, you freed up time, but now you're paying somebody else. So is that somebody else contributing in some way to the bottom line of your business? So for example, if you're giving giving away administrative tasks, in theory, that should free you up to do more revenue producing activities. If you're not doing more revenue producing activities, then you've just increased your expenses and kept the same income. And so I try to help them understand like the big picture of hiring somebody needs to contribute in some way, and it can contribute directly or indirectly, but we have to make sure that that person is doing the most important things. And it's interesting to, I have a way that I help people understand like who they need. And instead of looking at people, we look at functions. So people don't think of their business this way, but if you ask somebody like, what are the primary things your chiropractic practice needs to sustain day to day? And they start listing those things. And I'm like, so that's what, those are the things you need to hire for. And that's the person you're looking for. One thing.
That was like, took way too long for us to realize, because so like within chiropractic, especially like a lot of the people who listen are very family oriented practices. And so like creating this very happy, like experience is very important. And so, some of the biggest qualifiers that most people go through in looking for someone on their team is like, do they love chiropractic? Step one. And then like, are they happy and smiley? And then they think like, well, everything else can be taught. And I'm curious to know if you would agree with that, because like, that's like kind of what I thought for a long time of like, I can teach them. Well, one, I technically could, but like some things are just innate skills. And also if it's not a skill of mine, can I teach someone to be detail oriented and things like that? And so it was a really hard thing for us to realize like, okay, We have happy covered. We have like the joyous person at the front desk who's going to answer the phone covered. Now I need like somebody who's in a management role and like they need more HR skills and they need more this and like really to go about hiring that way. And it can be kind of like, oh, but like, do you go to the chiropractor? And they maybe not. That's the thing I think I learned to like replace chiropractic. Like, do you love chiropractic as the first thing? Like, I can teach you to love chiropractic. Like, that's easy. Yes. You're going to get it for free being here. So like, if there's something wrong with you, if you don't love free chiropractic and getting adjusted regularly. And so like, that was a big lesson that we definitely had to learn.
Yeah, I love how you called it innate skills, because that's absolutely true. So what I tell the folks that I work with when they're hiring is there's three things you're kind of looking for. Two things you can kind of teach or fudge around. And the third thing is it's a hard no, a hard stop. And that is, does the person actually get the role? And so let's take, so you're booking new clients, right? And happy is great. Like, we want people to be happy on the phone or over the, you know, the intake forms or whatever you have, but they have to have an innate understanding of what it takes to get somebody from, I'm inquiring about your services to let's get you on the schedule. Mm-hmm. And you can't teach that, because if somebody just doesn't get that, you can't teach it to them. What you can teach them are some of the skills, like let's work on your writing skills. We can teach that. Let's work on your technology skills and like teach you a new software for scheduling or whatever, but you can't teach people innately like to think in sales, because that's really what that position is.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you temper that out in an interview though? Like if they've been in sales, then great. You're like, all right, if you've been in sales, you're probably going to get it. But otherwise, how do you figure out?
So when I'm in an interview, what I have found, and I'm probably not the world, I'm not the world's best interview, but what I've experimented with over the years and found that works is a couple of things. The first one is, in an interview, of course, we're going to ask those skills related questions because that's important too, especially if you need somebody to hit the ground running right away and you don't have time to teach them. But we're also looking for how people think. So when I'm asking questions, I am more interested in some cases in how someone would approach a situation or approach a certain problem, because that tells me how their brain works and how well they would do in a situation figuring something out on their own. And so I ask those types of questions. And I also give people scenarios in some cases, like here's a common scenario in our industry. Tell me how you might approach that or mm-hmm. how you would handle that. And that's another opportunity for me to see how somebody thinks about something. So that's that innate thing, the thing you can't really teach.
Are there any so everybody on the show knows I'm obsessed with the Enneagram. Do you know what that is?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know what your Enneagram is?
I am a 3-wing 2.
Okay, so. Me too. So, but people are surprised that I actually don't like using the Enneagram in hiring, because like it's just such a complicated, like people get mistyped too easily.
Yeah.
Especially when they're like, everyone's going to come across like an Enneagram 2 or a 1 or a 9 in an interview. They just are, because they're answering questions like for a job. And they're thinking of it through the lens of what would I do for my job? Not like, what would I do if my husband said that to me? I'd be like, fuck off. Yes. But you would never answer that in a personality test. So are there tests that you like doing? So let's say you're working with me and I was like, I have this team. I love them, but I'm just not sure that like I'm utilizing their skills appropriately. Are there certain books, tests, things like that you start having people work with?
Well, there's tons out there. And if you know how to use them, any of them can be useful. So if I'm ever wanting to use a specific test, sometimes I will consult with somebody who's certified in it or an expert so we can get a correct analysis. But one test I do use is called the Kolbe A, and it's different than a personality test because personality changes over time. But the Kolbe is like how I function, or they call it the MO or the modus operandi. So basically, here's how I approach things. And they've got 4 components, and it's a scale of 1 to 10. And it's interesting because the way they look at it. So there's quick start, fact finder, follow through, and implementer. And there's on the scale of 1 to 10, if you're low on quick start, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're bad in that area. It just means that I approach these situations in this way. And so it's really helpful in finding. So if you're looking for an administrative assistant, for example, or somebody who's going to be handling your intake or your HR or your billing or, you know, any of that stuff, you're probably going to want somebody who is higher in follow through or higher in fact finder, because those people are the people who are going to dig and find answers. They're the people who are going, who see systems mm-hmm. and can create systems and processes and follow through. And if you're looking for somebody to manage your technology, you're probably looking for somebody who functions a little bit higher in the implementer, because they're engineers and they can see how things come together and build things and deliver that. So when you're thinking about those innate skills, that's a really helpful one I use. But, you know, then I pair it with lots of the other ones, like the predictive index, or the Myers-Briggs or things, mm-hmm. if you're looking for personality and that friendliness or the customer service type right. aspect.
So I feel like one of the number one reasons that someone paints themselves into this corner of like, I'm doing everything, even like, especially when they have paid members of their teams, because like quite literally, if you are a chiropractor and you have, let's say, 3 front desks, yes, you are the only one who can adjust in that clinic. But like beyond adjusting and like maybe, you know, a couple things that like I would just attach to the adjustment, there's lots of other things that your staff can do. So what is the mindset issue that like they don't want to give up those duties? Because they're complaining that they have too much on their plate. But then I've worked with enough chiropractors to be like, oh yeah, okay, delegate that. And they're like, no. And it's like, well, do you want to get out of this situation or not?
There's a couple of things that I think of. And I think what you're specifically asking is, nobody can do it the way I do, or I'm mm-hmm. worried if I delegate it, it's not going to get done the way I do. And I think part of there's 2 components here. So one is, if we're delegating tasks, then yes, that's going to happen. Because if you're not going to do the task the way I do the task, especially if that person doesn't really understand why they're doing their task or the context around the task, they're just going to do what they're told. And you still, as the owner, still have to manage that. Did it mm-hmm. get done? Did it get done right? All of those things. So I like to encourage people to think about how to delegate ownership. So I'm not delegating a task, I'm delegating an outcome.
Okay.
So if I'm looking to put somebody in a role, this is where the gets it, like I get this role comes into place. And it's like, your role is to, I keep taking intake because that's the, like the easiest one mm-hmm. for me to think
of.
Oh,
I mean, getting new patients from the phone into the clinic, that is like a banger yes. example. Yes.
So your role is to convert people. And if I'm looking at how well you're converting people and you're not converting people very well, that's an issue. So we have to look at, do you know what is involved? Like, what are the levers you can pull to help people more easily get into an appointment? So you're delegating that entire function to somebody so that it's not your responsibility anymore. You're holding somebody else accountable to knowing how to do that. And then you're watching whether they're doing it or not. Another aspect of that is, so I'm high fact finder on the Colby and also high in follow through, which means that systems are my thing.
I don't know if you're a 3.
Huh?
I said, I'm already doubting you're a 3. Us 3s fly by the seat of our pants and don't.
So I do systems. That's my thing, is systems. And I think people don't realize how all the different ways you can systematize something, because you can systematize a process, which is first I do this, then I do this, then I hit that button and we're done. But you can also systematize the way you think about things. And so if you're worried that somebody is not going to get the same outcome that you're wanting them to get, you can tell them, this is the thought process I go through when I'm doing this thing. And so you can teach them your thought process, which will more easily get them to do the thing you need them to do, more like the way you do it, if they're using your same thought process. So those are 2 ways that make delegation a little bit easier. And the third thing is just, some people don't like letting go of things. And I'm one of those people. And so there's no system that's going to fix that. You as a person just need to examine, why is it that I'm having trouble letting go of this thing, and realizing I'm never going to grow if I don't. So I got to figure this out.
Yeah. I feel like that really comes down to not trusting that they'll take care of it. And as much as you would, like, yep. This is your baby. Like this is, and so how, and they never will. Like, they're not paid well enough. Like, there, it's not their name on the door. It's not their legacy. And so how do you come to that, like, acceptance that I'm going to trust you with this thing that's really important, even though you might mess it up, You might not do it as well as I would, because honestly, like, I'm an amazing salesman. So like the chances that you're better than me are not likely, but I could hire for that differently. Like, but you have to have all of that. Like, you have to be aware of what you're hiring for so much clearer than so many are. Like, so many Kairos are just like, well, I need someone to answer the phone because we're really busy around here. And so that's what they think the role is answering the phone. You could have a teenager answer the phone, but like if the role is conversion, that's different. But anyways, my question was, like, how do you get them? How do you get the employee to care almost as much as you? Is that even reasonable?
I think so. And I have to say, though, in today's employment market, it is really hard. I don't want to say it's impossible, but I have been seeing like hiring is really hard lately because, and I don't want to speculate on this show anyway.
Oh, yeah. We'll why speculate. That is. I'll speculate the shit out of things. Yes. what
do you? But it is hard because people these days are approaching employment a little bit differently. But
you're talking about Gen Z, aren't you?
Okay, fine. Yes.
Yes. Listen.
Definitely.
Just call it like it is.
There's definitely a gap in there. But it makes hiring harder because you're narrowing your candidate pool even more because now not only are you looking for somebody with skills and now innate abilities, but you're looking for somebody who's in alignment with your values. And so that's the third thing I include in the interview is asking questions about how people approach things or think about things or understanding how my values show up day to day in the practice. So that as I'm hiring people, we're going to have a greater connection and they're going to be more loyal and have longevity. Also ownership. So as you're delegating ownership, people feel more connected to what they're doing and they're more likely to care when they know they're not just coming to check tasks off a list every day. Like they have a stake in this because a lot is riding on what they're doing mm-hmm. for your business.
So, you know, you've said delegate tasks a couple times, and I think that most people listening, when they hear that, they think like, oh yeah, I need you to do the bank deposit. But like, what are, not like necessarily what are some of the examples, but like, how can you create a culture of like, I'm giving you this role. These are the clear expectations, like very like measurable expectations. So you know you're doing this role well or not. And then like how important is follow through from the leader on like checking in? Like how often should you be checking in? And then like reward systems.
Holy buckets. I feel like that could be an entire episode, but wow. I will do my best. I use something. Well, if you're familiar with the Entrepreneurial Operating System or EOS, if you're not, okay, Traction, so go check it out.
Yeah.
I like to borrow some of their philosophies sometimes because some of them are actually pretty beneficial, but one of the tools they use is called the scorecard. And it's what you just, it's basically, it's metrics. They've coined the term scorecard. But so in your example about bank deposits, and I'm dramatizing this because let's be honest, like depositing something in the bank is like, it is what it is, but you could think of it in terms of
an employee roundup. I found out months later that she was doing bank deposits and wasn't like, she would just round up.
Oh,
uh-huh. Yeah. We found out at the end of the year when our accountant was like, there's like 13 deposits that are not lining up. And like one of our other person started going down and we're just like, are you freaking kidding me? So anyways, that was the wrong person in the wrong role. But yeah.
Yes. So thinking in terms of that, accountability in that case, and I mean, I don't recommend going into this depth, but think of it in terms of your stuff has to reconcile at the end of the month. And if it, you know what I mean? So if it's not reconciling, that's a performance issue. Yep. Or we've got to get cash flow, right? So if the deposits aren't getting made, then we have no cash flow. That's an issue. That's a performance issue. So that's how you want to measure things is thinking about what does this person do? And how does that contribute? What value are they providing? How is that measurable? Like, how do I know that thing is working? What am I looking at? Some things you might want to look at weekly or daily, like appointments, like conversions to appointments. You're probably wanting to look at those weekly because you probably know, here's how many appointments I have to book every week to cover expenses at the end of the month. So if we're off a week, that's probably a big deal in some cases because you might not make payroll or you might not make rent or whatever. So looking at, and then some things you might look at quarterly, which is patient turnover maybe, or, you know, something like that, that you can look at. But that's how I would measure that. Those, I would deliver expectations in terms of helping them understand, here's how what you do, here's why it's a big deal, mm-hmm. and here's how we're measuring it. And then they get real-time feedback. So if something's off track, right? They're like, ooh, something's not working. What's going on here?
Right. And so I think so many chiros are, yeah, I mean, it's just, you can see the level of detail that like a well-run team requires. It requires hiring the right person with the right skill set. So many chiros are like, step one, whoops, already screwed it up. But she smiles and she gets adjusted. Then step two, well, I guess, honestly, before step one is knowing the role, like knowing that the role is more than just answering the phone, like really look at your business, where you're adding on and like what skill sets are already covered. And then like what more, most people, you're hiring because you need extra hands, but you also want to grow. And so like a really understanding that, then hiring appropriately, then taking that role and turning it into these KPIs or the key performance indicators where it's like measurable. And it's good. Like, I don't know. It's funny because you have to like teach someone to think in KPIs, I feel like. Because the number of times where I've like asked my staff, like, okay, so the goal is conversions, like getting people from the phone into our clinic. Why don't you let me know some like KPIs that you think would be good to track on a monthly basis for that? And they'll just come back with these like, oh gosh, now I can't think of anything that's not measurable, but it's just this like, if the person felt good after their phone call, and you're like, you're right. Your job is to make them feel good so they want to come into the clinic. But how would we measure that? Like, how would we go about? And they're like, oh, yeah, you're right. And so it's like helping them to realize, you know, because we have such a people-focused profession. I mean, a lot of professions are, you know, where it's just like, and we just like train into them. Like, it's all about how the customer feels. It's all about how that patient feels connected to us. And then you're like, but then how I'm tracking you is like, what percentage of this and what is this? And so it's like these two kind of like, you like bring them in on the feels, but then you like feel like you're continuing to rate their performance on a number, but then follow through. So like, do you recommend following through on these KPIs on like a monthly basis?
I typically do with most clients. So we'll have like a weekly check-in, and the majority of KPIs are monthly because the amount of work it takes to track everything week to week is, and I just don't know how helpful it is. But there are some things that we're looking at every week, and procedures for chiropractic would be one, like, because fluctuation in procedures has a huge impact to your monthly performance. And if you're seeing a fluctuation in procedures week to week, it's just an opportunity.
When you're saying procedures, you mean adjustments, right?
Adjustments.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
I was like, wait, is she talking about like systems?
What are you
procedures?
Talking about? Yeah. So in every industry, it's different. Yeah. In some industries, it's sessions. In some industries, it's patients. I'm like, so thank you.
Just like, wait. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Adjustments. Yep.
The number of adjustments changes week to week, that's an indication like, oh, what's going on here? And it might be something totally benign, like, of course, it was 4th of July. Of course, we're going to have less adjustments. Or it might be something else that's going on. And it's like, we better, you know, tweak something really quick before it becomes a big issue by the end of the month. So that's something I would look at weekly. And maybe possibly the number of phone calls that are coming in, because if those go down, then it's like a trickle down effect. So if those go down, we're doing less adjustments. And so just trying to catch things before they become a big issue. So those things are weekly, and everything else I would say monthly.
Okay. So yeah, so you really do focus on the CEO aspect of like making sure that they're setting things in a good place for the right team to be successful. And like, I definitely see that as like somebody who I personally work with the chiropractors, where it's just like easy to be like, you are getting in the way of your employees performing. Yes. As long as you have the right employees.
Yes.
Now, what do you do? Like, there can be, okay, so let's say that I've just been like real mediocre, and I know you don't want to label people as things, but I've been a very mediocre boss. I've done a lot of stuff. So I've really created this culture where my staff can do the bare minimum because I'm doing everything. And now they're like comfy. They're comfy there. And like, we start working together and I'm like, you're right. We need clearer roles and KPIs, and we're going to do these personality tests, and I might take something off somebody's and move it. And like, how do you just have to like burn things down and start from scratch? Or like, how do you get them out of the like, oh, am I going to get a raise for working harder? Like, that's a,
am I going to get a raise for actually doing my job?
Exactly. Exactly. Between us, we know that is what we want to say. But like, how do you get like, okay, great, you've decided to change, but now the CA is like, my, or the front desk feels like, now my life seems more difficult.
I think the biggest mistake that people make in this situation is lack of communication. Mm. Either it's hard to communicate, they're scared to communicate it, or they just don't know how to communicate it. And I would say communication, start early and do it often. So just kind of planting the seed about, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it, and get people, a lot of people that are coming into these jobs have no idea how a business runs. And it's okay for the business owner to talk about business in terms of, yes, the business makes money. I don't put it all in my pocket, I promise you.
No, that's not how much I make, right?
I have to like pay the electric bill and the rent and your salary. And if we don't bring in a minimum amount of money, that stuff doesn't happen. And then none of us have a job. So here's why we're making these changes, because we want to do better. And then I ultimately like to try it, tie it to your clients or your patients, because if we're doing a good job that and we're making money, that means we're helping people. And that's what we're here to do. So I would communicate to them about little over time about what this means for them in terms of, here's how we've been doing it. We're going to change it a little bit, and here's why, so that they know what to expect. And ultimately, and I think you alluded to this, some people just are not going to be on board with that. And you are not going to like, you're not going to be able to help it. They're going to self-select out. I don't want accountability because I liked coming to work and slacking off. Yes, you're losing somebody and it's going to cost money to replace them. But at the end of the day, were they actually even doing anything for you to begin with? So
you said the phrase self-select out, and I could not agree more. So once a year I work with like 20 to 30 some chiros on like stuff, really important stuff. And one of these things, like as they start to make changes, I realized after doing it this last year, how many people, their staff starts to like quit because like the owner starts waking up and going, oh, they're not helping build this business. They're actually making my life harder. And so we start putting these systems in for efficiency and accountability. And I realize going into next year's class that I almost need to give like a trigger warning of like, hey, you might lose some of your staff. You're going to be happy about it though. Trust me, you're going to be happy. But like, yeah, as soon as you start showing up differently, one of two things happens. Like, I feel like you've got the staff who are like, thank God.
Yes.
Like, I am bored over here and this business has potential and you've been slacking. They're probably not consciously thinking that, but if they are, that's a fantastic employee. Or two, they're like, oh no, oh no. And they're like pulling up Indeed or whatever, like pretty quickly to start looking for their next lazy job. And like you start saying things of like, how about you set some goals and bring them to me and we'll look and see, and then tell me how you think your role can go about helping produce this goal, like how you can contribute, and we'll be meeting on a monthly basis to see whether you met the goal or not. There is a good amount of people who are just like, no, this job just got a little too accountable and they don't want to sit in that. Like, it's like, they know, oh, I'm not going to meet those goals. Like, it's like,
yes. Well, and there's a lot of, so thinking is hard. I mean, it's harder work than doing.
A really funny sentence.
And there are a lot of people who just want to show up every day, have a checklist, do the checklist, check out and go home. And in some cases that works. But if you're growing a business, especially a small business where everybody's wearing a lot of hats, it doesn't really work very well, because what I like to say is when you're delegating in that instance, you're not really saving yourself any time or energy. You're just delegating a task, but you're switching the work you do from doing the task to now you're managing the person who's doing the task. It's the same amount of work, and it's actually harder to manage people than to manage tasks. So
yeah. Yeah. It's my 12-year-old was just doing robotics robotics camp this week, and it was mixed grades, and she's one of the older ones and just one of the more experienced in robotics. And so they didn't get put in teams. They got to like pick their teams. And so like this little team emerged, and like on the fourth day, she is so frustrated with me because everybody's crazy. And like, she's like, today's task, I was the only one who knew how to do it. And everybody was just bugging me, asking what they could do. And I was like, just leave me alone. And I was like, and she like literally said, it's just easier if I do it myself. And I'm just like, well, Charlie, first of all, I don't want you to feel bad, because I talked to 45-year-old adults running their business who say the exact same thing. Yep. But like, this isn't going to go away. This like slow down to go further thing, that's what it is. And so many chiros, as we're talking about like how they're hiring and how they don't have all this stuff, it's because they're going so fast already.
Yep.
And telling them like, hey, slow down for a sec. And assess what you currently have on your team.
Yep.
Really assess your business and figure out who you need to hire. Then take the time to hire. So I said, like, we used to hire one way, and this most recent time we hired very, very differently. It took us 4 months to find the perfect person instead of typically 4 to 6 weeks.
Right.
And the only reason it would take 6 weeks is because we have like a three-part hiring process of like three different. And so it was just like, but this is one of the most quality employees that we've hired in the last few years. Well, they're all great, but like, just like most surprising, like coming to me and being like, hey, you said this thing. And I like went and looked into it, and I'm like, you did? Oh my God. I love you.
Exactly.
But we had to slow down to go, hold up. I know. Because a lot of people who are hiring, they might not just be hiring because they need to add, but because somebody's leaving. Right. And so then they're like, shit, like go to ChatGPT, come up with a fun ad post. Like, you know, do you love playing Legos and like healthy things? And then they throw it on there and they're like, this person is happy and they like chiropractic. You're hired. I needed you to start 2 weeks ago. So like when this person leaves, it's not chaos. And so like, when you tell them like, no, you need to like slow down, you're going to be understaffed for a little bit. But what I've found is during those times of being understaffed, you know, you kind of like filter through what really needs to happen anyways. You really start to find your broken systems because they become much more apparent when you're lower staffed. You come up with more creative solutions as well of like, oh, so that thing used to take an hour every Monday, but now that was her role. I don't have an extra. And so like, it's crazy how the team starts to come up with these new systems that you're like, well, why weren't we doing that before? Well, because you didn't have to. You weren't in a situation where you know, like if it ain't broke, don't fix it is something that happens all the time where it's like, well, now it's broke. You're understaffed. You need to figure out how to. And so, but just the idea of slowing down, think about it, create some systems, create clarity for the person. That's another thing. Like, and that's something I've always struggled with because of my ADHD or whatever, where it's like, what's the clarity of the role? What are their expectations? How are they going to be measured? And then actually following through on all of
that. I don't know how many times I have encountered a situation where when somebody leaves, all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, look at all these issues that are uncovered because this person was doing things terribly, but it was covered up. And then all of a sudden it comes to light and it's a huge mess. So yes,
but yeah,
right person. Off. And if you think about it, if you're hiring the right person, the whole onboarding integration process should be super minimal because anybody who gets what they're doing should be able to come in, orient themselves to your systems and everything, but then kind of be like, oh, okay, I know how this works. Mm-hmm. And I might have a few questions here and there, but ultimately I kind of know, I kind of get how this runs.
100%. I can personally attest that. So like, okay, so we posted in December. She started in June. She's been with us for a month. Normally we would have hired in January. So the person would have been with us for about 6 months at this point. So she's only been here 1 month instead of like 6 months if we were hired. She is further along in her understanding and contribution to the team 1 month in than most of our employees were at 6 months in previously. Yep. Because they got to this like point of like good enough. And then like nobody was there to like push, you know, further and stuff. So like, yeah, it is slow down to go faster. Hard, easy versus easy, hard.
Yes. So.
Okay, Casey, do you have anything, any final notes that like we didn't touch on?
Well, one thing I think we kind of touched on for like a microsecond at the beginning was helping chiropractors feel not guilty about delegating. And one of my soapboxes, a hill I will die on, is that I don't think a lot of business owners understand how important it is to put on that CEO hat. And what I mean by that is things change in entrepreneurship at breakneck speed. And if nobody is out paying attention to the industry, to the market, to what's happening in the health and wellness industry, changes are going to happen and they're going to blindside you and blindside your team. But if you're looking out ahead and you see them coming, it's something that you can plan for. And that is your role as the owner of your chiropractic business, is to help respond to things that are happening instead of reacting. And if nobody is out doing that, none of your staff are doing it. And so if you're not doing it, nobody's doing it. And so that's why we delegate, is so we can have that time on a regular basis to be paying attention to what's happening.
I love that. Okay. So where can people find more of you if they want to work with you or just like free content you're putting out somewhere? Where are you at?
Well, I actually have my own podcast. I have taken a break over the summer, but it's called Female Founders Breaking Boundaries, and it's more of exactly what we've talked about today. So if you're interested in business system stuff, I invite you to come listen. And my website is c-sweetboutique.com, and we work with clients who are chiropractors and other health and wellness industry practices, trying to get them into a place where they're getting closer and closer to building staff and getting out of the day-to-day management while maintaining their profits. So you can check my website out there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being a guest. Really, really valuable messages that chiros just need to continue to hear as all small business owners. Like, you know, I think we beat up on ourselves a lot of like, oh, but like you see it across all professions, like a lot of the same issues, just different degrees. So
yes. Well, thanks, Lauren. It was fun meeting you and talking about things I love.
Yeah, me too. All right, She Slayers, until next week. Bye. Hey, She Slayers, are you looking to get your team off the phone and streamline your front desk so you can spend more time doing what you love? SCED has exactly what you're looking for. They will automate all your appointment reminders, missed appointment reminders, reactivation campaigns, allow you to have two-way texting with your patients. Plus, they have a very cool app that your patients are going to love. The app alone saves chiropractors tons of time because it gives patients the flexibility to move appointments to a time that works better for them. Don't worry, you won't lose control of your schedule because you'll have access to all the parameters that keep you still in control. Plus, there's overbook protection, so your schedule won't get out of hand. SCED was created by a chiropractor for chiropractors, so you can rest assured that you're getting the absolute best system for your office. Dr. Eric Kowalki is committed to the chiropractic mission, and he works closely with his developers to always be innovative so that we have the best system available. If you're hesitant to switch to SCED because you already use something else, let me tell you, it's worth every penny. Plus, mention that you heard about it on my podcast and they'll give you a discount. Seriously, it is a game changer. Don't wait.